Hello and welcome to the final regular season True Blue LA podcast. Just no, this is it. Season finale. We're not going to do any for the playoffs. Of this season. Hi, Eric.
Hello.
How are you?
I am feeling like it's the end of the season.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, all right, let's do this.
So we're going to look ahead at the final six games that the Dodgers have in the regular season, look ahead at what the playoffs look like, probably talk some roster, probably answer some questions from Craig, probably look back to a Dodger of old, all of that after this.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Eric, do you ever feel like, metaphorically, you're two games back with six games to play?
I you know what? I do. All the time. I feel like I'm in, you know, I'm in a constant state of catch-up, and
like, you could, you know, you could
right
actually win a division, but
in theory, this is one of those things, right? So the Dodgers literally won their 100th game on Sunday of the season, and there's still six games to play, and yet there's this like overarching feeling that they're somehow disappointing. Like,
yeah.
And it is their fault, but it's all like, it's also kind of not, like, in a way, just because like the Giants just keep winning, and so they're just proving very hard to catch. So yeah. Like. But also the Dodgers put themselves in a position where they had to catch them. So, like, because they lost all three series to the Giants after the All-Star break. So, like, that's a problem. But, like, still possible. But, like, it's looking very, very much like the Dodgers are going to be hosting the Cardinals in the wild card game next week. But, yeah, they're – but, like, you know, 100 wins, that's, like – that doesn't happen that often. We'll get to a little bit later on that, on a trivia. But they're really good, but also like maybe
not as good as the Giants.
Yeah,
and, you know, and like I don't want to get into the semantics of like, well, actually, yeah, they might be better. Well, no, yeah, we're talking pure record here.
The Dodgers lead the National League in runs scored on the season.
They won the Pythagorean battle against the Giants right. This season.
Wait, no, they didn't. Because they were tied. Like
they were tied,
the
and they lost by one. Then they won by a bunch, then lost by two. Right? I think
okay,
they did.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. So, but yeah, like they're like leading the league in runs scored, but like you look at the lineup. I was looking at something the other day. Like so. As it stands right now, they have like seven starters with like a WRC plus in the 130s, right? Like excellent, excellent hitter. And then like the other is either going to be Chris Taylor, who's at 114 because he's slumping badly, but he's been very good all year and like solidly above average throughout his career. Imagine being a 114 WRC plus as your worst hitter in the lineup. They also have Gavin Lux, who on the season is still below 100, but like since he's come back, looked very dynamic and played in the outfield, looked much better. They also have Cody Bellinger, who might be coming back, who shouldn't play. But like they have a lineup who should be like blowing doors off teams more than they have been. Like they scored 9 runs. They won 2 out of 3. They won every series on the road trip, 2 games out of 3. But then, like, they only scored 9 runs against a terrible Diamondbacks pitching staff in 3 games. They had to go beat the Rockies twice in 10 innings. like, it's Rockies do play better at home, but it's like, and then the Giants go in and sweep the Rockies in Coors Field. So like, it's rough, man. Like they're just, it's like they, they're gonna have to hit their way out of stuff in October, you know, more than they have, like, because they just seem more prone to like, everyone's like terrified of like, well, you know, it's always the thing. It's a one game playoff. It's the wild card. You're gonna get Adam Wainwright, who did shut them down pretty well a couple weeks back. Like, yeah, like you just, that could easily end their season like earlier than expected. But like, yeah, they, it seems like they should be performing a lot better than they have been.
So we're recording this on a Tuesday before the Dodgers start the six-game slate, and we're sort of in an awkward position of, if there's a game 163, we're probably not recording before then. Maybe we'll do an emergency pod. I don't know. But with these one-game series that are looking like the Dodgers are having at least one, maybe two, the rosters get weird, so I think we're gonna mostly talk about that, you know, come Tuesday in preparation for the NLDS that the Dodgers are gonna be playing, because they're actually gonna win out, and the Giants are finally gonna lose a bunch, right?
Yeah, but also just the point, 163 is the regular season game, so it'll be like the same roster, because you know there's. Yeah, it's just going to be like what they have now, which like currently they're carrying 12 position players and 16 pitchers. I suspect when Bellinger comes back, that they'll get rid of a pitcher, probably Andrew Vasquez, who was called up because they used a bunch of low leverage guys on in Saturday's loss to the Diamondbacks. I just want to point out, like, it is weird, right? Like, as good, like, we say the Dodgers could be playing better. Especially like offensively, but since the Giants series, they're also 14-5. So like that's exactly what you would want a team to do who's like chasing in a division, and like in most years, that's probably good enough to get back into first place. Especially when you're only down a game after that series. But the Giants are 15-4, so like it's hard. And then we talked last week. Our trivia question was. About the Dodgers' best 50-game finish to a season, and it was 37-13 in Brooklyn, I believe. And right now, the Dodgers are 33-11 in their last 44 games. So, excellent chance to get to the 37 if they win 4 out of 6 this week. If they do better, they'll have the best 50-game finish in Dodgers history, and they still are a very it'll be tough for them. It seems like the most likely scenario for them to win the division would be a game 163. Like if they catch them, it'll be like they'll be tied after 162 or something like that. That said, Brandon Belt broke his thumb on Sunday, so he's going to be out for a little bit. We'll see. Like, I think he's up to 29 home runs. His previous career high was 18. It's gonna be interesting. The Dodgers play the Padres, and then the Brewers. Brewers clinched. They're locked into the number 2 spot in the NL. So that's tough. But then the Giants have the Padres this coming weekend, but they first play the Diamondbacks. So the Giants do have the easier schedule. They're both at home. But yeah, that's sort of where we're at. But in terms of like a 163 or a wild card, Dave Roberts did make it clear last week. He said Max Scherzer is his one game guy, like or game one guy if that's what it comes to. But yeah, if there's a wild card game, it's Max Scherzer. Now the interesting scenario. Is like if they do a 163, right? So the current rotation is set up to where Walker Buehler starts Sunday, like the series, the finale of the season. Now you wonder, like, if that game's meaningless, like if the division's already decided, maybe he like doesn't really, you know, maybe it's a short outing or something like that, just to sort of keep his arm fresh. because he'd be in line to be the game one guy Friday if they win the wild card game. So, like, they have to, like, sort of keep him somewhat fresh, but also don't want to, like, overwork him. So that's a scenario. But then also, if there's a 163 in play, like, if they go full bore and just say, like, they need Sunday to get to 163, so Buehler goes, then Scherzer goes 163 Monday, and then you basically have Kershaw, I think, in the wildcard game, because Urias is going Saturday. So it's going to be like interesting to see how that plays out. But that's a weird scenario. But like, I don't know if it's going to get to that point.
Right.
But yeah. Still, that, so the, yeah. Yeah.
The most likely the Dodgers are not playing a game 163. They're playing a wild card game. Max Scherzer will start at Dodger Stadium. And hopefully the Dodgers win. And then, like you said, Walker Buehler in line for game one. What would the rotation... We'll talk about this more, but just so answer that real quick. What does the rotation look like in an LDS should they win a wild card game?
Yeah, so then it's the choice of... not that the order matters, because by then you could flip it to how you want. But this coming week, Kershaw's going Friday, Urias is going Saturday. That's just how they're lined up. But that doesn't mean Kershaw's game two, necessarily. Mm-hmm. Like Urias has pitched better, I think, down the stretch. So I think it would go, like, if it's clearly Buehler game one, because he'd be... Mm-hmm. fully rested, then I think they would go Urias and then Scherzer game three rested after the off day, and then Kershaw game four. I think that's what they would do.
Okay. And like I said, we'll preview that more and look once we have some definitive idea of how everything lines up.
Yeah. So the other sort of news last week was AJ Pollock back, like, a little earlier than expected. And when he first hurt his hamstring, this was back in the Giants series, the first weekend of September. He had to be helped off the field. It looked really bad. And they said grade two hamstring, minimum of 2 to 3 weeks. There was only 4 weeks left in the season at that point. Dave Roberts said, I didn't think he was, I thought he was done for the season. Like, this week he said that. He didn't say it back then, because he never would say that. Like, Pollock, it's interesting, like, he didn't end up doing, like, any minor league rehab games. He mostly stayed in Los Angeles, worked with the training staff there. They had occasionally, they'd do simulated stuff. Either a pitcher around would throw to him, or they'd have a couple guys from Rancho come to Dodger Stadium and throw to him. And he just did the work sort of that way and got ready. They sort of tailored it to how kind of Pollock wanted to do it. He said there was a trainer, Keith Pine, who was in town that he worked with a lot and was very helpful in getting him back on track. But they had planned to bring him back during the Diamondback series. And then Cody Bellinger had a rib fracture, which we talked about last week. That landed him on the injured list. And then Chris Taylor was dealing with pinched nerve in his neck. So, like, they're like, you know what? We're bringing Pollock back early. And so they brought him back two games early in Coors Field. And they didn't even, like, start him right away. They had Luke Raley in right field in the second game. They used Pollock as a pinch hitter. They don't want to, like, overtax his hamstring right now, like, just by playing him every day. And so they have to sort of be a little bit ginger. Raley ended up homering, which was good. But then Pollock, like, hit two doubles the next day. He homered on Friday. So he's been, like, super productive, like he pretty much has been all year. And then Bellinger is, like, was kind of going slow. He could technically be activated today on Tuesday, but it might take a few days. We'll see how that sort of goes. But again, like, he kind of shouldn't be playing. Like, Lux is playing better than him. They have other options. Like, in terms of having an extra bench guy, that's great. But, like, yeah, we've talked about this. Like, he really shouldn't be playing. So, like, we'll see how that sort of plays out. But, and then I get, you know, the other, when we do, like, roster stuff, Lux will be the guy, because how big of a role is he going to have in the postseason? Like, he's sort of playing his way into more playing time, I think. But we'll see how they sort of divvy that up. I think it's going to be a situation where if Taylor and Pollock are still sort of ailing a little bit, Taylor may be less likely to be that by the time the playoffs roll around. But you could see a situation where Lux like plays a little more than maybe we would have expected. He played center field in Coors 2. He made some like really good plays out there, so like it was pretty pretty impressive. But yeah, that's sort of where they're at. 1 week to sort of figure out exactly what's going to happen, and then we'll sort of figure out on our end, podcast-wise, what's going to happen after that.
Before we head to the break and you ask me some trivia question that I'm going to get wrong, we got a bit of a bittersweet news just this morning.
Yep. Jaime Herrin, the Hall of Famer, Spanish language broadcaster for the Dodgers since 1959, he announced that he's going to retire after next season, so he's going to still go one more year, 2022. Just an all-around, like, just super guy. One of the nicest people around. Like, he's just incredible. Like, just a wonderful guy. Absolute legend in the business. I was reading something on him. So, from 1962 to 1984, they don't have the exact number, but he called roughly 4,000 games in a row. Like, that is ridiculous. And the only reason, like, the Dodger game streak stopped is that he went to call some of the games in the 84 Olympics in L.A. So next year is going to be his 64th season. He's already in the Hall of Fame. He's in the Dodgers Ring of Honor. So he's going to, like, we're going to get to talk to him a little this afternoon. Happy for him. You know, he said he gets to spend more time with his family. He's going to do some traveling. And, you know, as long as he's, like, going out the way he wants to go out, like, I'm excited. But Jaime's wonderful. Very happy for him, and an absolute Dodger icon, really. So, yeah, absolutely. Hope he gets the sort of, you know, cheers and ovations that he deserves this year and next. So it'll be fun.
And it'll be similar to how when we knew Vin Scully was retiring. It'll be interesting to see how you can even attempt to, I don't want to say replace him, but
yeah,
fill that role. Obviously, Fernando's still there, but just how they take that after you know, having to move on from such a legend and an icon on the team.
Yeah, and then, you know, maybe next year the Dodgers can win 100 games again for Jaime Herrin to call. They have 100 wins this year with 6 games left to play. Since joining the National League in 1890,
mm-hmm,
how many total seasons have the Dodgers won 100 games?
I will butcher that. I'm actually in the middle of figuring out how badly I would have answered this question, and so I'll explain that after this. How many seasons since 1890 have the team now known as the Dodgers won 100 games or more? So I alluded to this. I found this question really fascinating because of how little I had to go off of this. Because what I know of the Dodgers are the teams that I grew up watching and a little bit before that. And then, and sort of prior to me really being engaged in sports, I know the championships. I know the pennant winners. I know the award winners. I know all these players. I know all these stories. But win-loss record in the regular season, I actually have no idea. I don't know how much, on average, a pennant winner, when, you know, there was only 2 playoff teams in the National League, or when there wasn't, there's only the one, how many wins did it take? And I realized, after checking my work, how awful I would have been at that, because I didn't realize You didn't need as many wins as I thought to you know, be one of the top two teams when there weren't just that many teams. When there weren't 30 teams in baseball. So I would have, I think, dramatically overshot this and said something in the high teens, 20s. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Before you tell me the answer. Do you know how many teams of the pennant winners of the Dodgers, of the 24 pennant winners, won 100 games or more?
I mean, yes.
Oh, how many?
Well,
I'm getting it wrong. Okay, like, I've been saying that. Oh. I would have guessed something like 19, well, 20, if not more.
So, oh, okay. I for some reason, I, like, heard, like, I misheard your question. Oh, so, okay. I got you. So, because, so, the I want to, I'll answer that, but it's, like, interesting in the other way.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you said your answer was going to be, like, high teens, right? That's,
yep. Or, yep.
So, it's actually 9.
Yep.
So, but the interesting thing about that is only 6 of those, 9, won their division / league, whatever standings they were in. So 3 times they've won 100 and been like, you know, on the outside looking in. I mean, this year they're not on the outside looking in because they're the wild card, but they're going to be second place probably. But 1942 in Brooklyn, they won 104 games. And that was also another thing to look back, 154 game schedule. So like 100 wins over 162 games is .617 winning percentage. So like if you go back National League wise, so they'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, looks like 6 other teams. So like they'd be up to like 15.
Okay, so I was basically right.
So like Boys of Summer type team. Yeah, like those teams are winning like 97, 98. But like, you know, if they played 162 games, it would have. But like, yeah. So 100 wins. But yeah, so 1962, they finished tied with the Giants. So they did have a 3-team tiebreaker. They were 101-61 over the 162, and they lost 2 out of 3. So yeah, it's interesting. And then of the other teams, like I guess, are you counting 1899 as a pennant winner? I mean, or is this just World Series time pennant winning?
I am counting them. Yes.
Okay. So yeah. So they're one, and then yeah. So the other ones, the only 100 win team that otherwise didn't win the pennant was 2019.
Mm-hmm.
When I forgot what happened, but
yeah, it was weird.
Yeah, yep, they used Joe Kelly a lot. so,
but yeah, it's really interesting to me how I've kind of translated, and maybe a lot of this has to do with how good of a regular season team the Dodgers have been the last half decade. Of like, oh, 100 wins, that's good, but that happens. Like again, I was guessing somewhere in the 25% ish. Of the time for a very good franchise like the Dodgers, and I was obviously an idiot. So,
yeah,
as is the case. Well, I think you have a Dodgers rewind for us.
I do. This gentleman did not play on a 100 win Dodger team, but it's Bill Madlock. He was a suggestion from Brad Gunning, who shot me a message. He said he'd be a good idea for a Dodgers Rewind, and I agree. I for some reason I thought we already did him, but I looked and we did not. So Brad's suggestion was that he heard that Madlock is the only 4-time batting title winner to not be in the Hall of Fame. So he won batting titles with the Cubs in 75 and 76. He was only 24 and 25 those years, and then 81 and 83 with the Pirates. He was on the We Are Family Pirates 79 team that won it all. I was looking, his transaction log is pretty, has a bunch of like you know, pretty fun names on there. Like he's drafted by the Senators. They became the Rangers. And then he was traded to the Cubs for Fergie Jenkins. Then he was traded to the Giants in a trade that had Bobby Mercer. He went to the Pirates in a trade, in like a six-player trade that Ed Whitson went the other way. And then someone who went with from the Giants to the Pirates with Bill Madlock was Dave Roberts, but not that one. This was a left-handed pitcher. Then the Dodgers traded for him on August 31st, 1985. So he was a waiver trade guy. The Dodgers sent RJ Reynolds, Cecil Espy, and Sid Bream to the Pirates. I was looking at this because so the Dodgers did win 95 games that year. They were really good. They were up 7 games at the end of August, so like it wasn't like a super tight division race, but there were all, they also had a lot of games left that year. There was a player strike for a couple days in August, and they tacked on the makeup games at the end of the season. So I think there were like something like 37 games after September 1st. So there were still a lot to play. But also the Dodgers at the time, they had moved Pedro Guerrero to left field. I can't remember if Dave Anderson got hurt. He was playing third for a while. But then they had like Enos Cabell and Bob Baylor playing third. So they're like, we need to get third baseman. So they traded for Madlock, who at the time was 34. And he just kind of went off for them. He hit 360 down the stretch, 422 on base, 447 slugging. That was a 148 OPS plus. He even stole 7 bases. Now, he was pretty good at stealing bases throughout his career, but like that sort of, I don't remember that at all. He did hit 3 home runs in the NLCS. He was 8 for 24 with a double and 7 RBIs in the series, but they lost to the Cardinals. So he played third base for the Dodgers in 86 as well. That was a pretty bad team. He did well. He started the year in 87 as third baseman, but the Dodgers released him in May. Then he finished out his career with the Tigers that year, who won the AL East. In his career, 305, 365, 442 hitter. That's a 123 OPS plus. In 15 years, he had just over 38 WAR. 166 games with the Dodgers, so a little over a regular full season. 285, 346, 406, 22 doubles, 15 homers, a 112 OPS plus. But yeah, like not in the Hall of Fame, but really, really, really good hitter. And yeah, he was 85 was like the first Dodgers team I watched, and like he was certainly memorable. But like, yeah, I just remember like he just hit really, really well in September. And played great. So part of his hot September, I mentioned that they played a ton of games after August 31st. He played 1 game on August 31st, then in September, and then into October in the regular season. He was second on the team with 40 hits. Who was first on the team?
All right. You know how old I was when this happened?
Have we
talked about
one?
This? That I don't.
You know what? Like, wait. So, wait. Wait. When's your birthday? It's like
86. I was negative.
No, but what? What month? I forgot.
April.
Yeah. So you're in the womb at this point.
I really should know this.
Yeah. Yeah. Come on.
I don't know. Pedro Guerrero.
So that's a good guess because he was their best player in '85. But he also walked a lot, but like not a ton. I think he missed quite a bit of time in the last month, so he only played 19 games. He did have 24 hits. He hit .338. He was really good. But he was seventh on the team in hits. Do you have any other guess?
Nope.
Okay, so Mike Marshall, probably the best month of his career.
I think Mike Marshall's been the answer, one of the two for a few weeks right now. He's entering Zach Wheat territory. So
48 hits. But he had 11 home runs, 37 RBIs. I'm pretty sure. No, I think Frank Howard had a bigger month, but that was also like a crazy month where they played a ton of games. So, that was part of it, but he just kind of had a great, great finish to the year. So yeah, that was my, Bill Madlock 85 stuff for you. So I apologize for asking a womb trivia question, but
No, I was lamenting at my lack of knowledge, as I is, you know, it's a good thing for me to do during these trivia questions is just feel bad for myself. I'm currently scrolling through Rolling Stone's website nonstop to preview something that we're about to talk about, and this is a very frustrating experience. I'll explain why after we get through, you know, the thing that we do right now, which is
Questions for Craig. We love them.
Five questions, some of which have sub questions, mini questions, split off questions, including the first, which is a trivia question from Craig. Are you ready?
Sure.
Are you ready? I don't know what I just said. Corey Seager and Trey Turner each hit two home runs in the game last weekend, which sparked this week's trivia question on Dodger multi-homer games. You ready?
Yep.
We'll start off with this. Which Dodgers have had the most multi-home run games? Can Eric name the top five?
Now, this is all time, right?
This is... Every player on this list is an LA Dodger. I don't know if that means that is the case, but...
Okay, so... Yeah. So we're going to go with... Piazza?
Number one with 19.
Eric Karros?
Number three with 17.
Ron Say?
Strike hit tied with two others for 10th.
Okay. Now that I'm flummoxed. so let's go to Matt Kemp.
Strike two, not on my. I have the top 12 and not on the list.
I'm honestly shocked at that. Okay, so now Duke Snyder was technically an LA Dodger.
I'm looking through the. I think we're potentially talking all LA Dodgers.
Okay, so yeah. All right, so I will turn around from that. Why is this so hard?
So you have one and three. I'll let you know that there's a tie for fifth, so there's two players residing in that
Steve
slot.
Steve Garvey?
Steve Garvey, strike three, is tied for eighth.
I'm stunned.
You want to keep going?
No, I mean, well, let's see. No, just tell me. I think I just messed up.
Second place, perhaps the most famous multi-home run game in LA Dodgers, is Sean Green with 18. Yeah. Jock Peterson in fourth with 15. And then tied at 14 apiece, Gary Sheffield and Raul Mondesi.
I thought about going the Sheffield route, but I don't think I would have.
He burned you a lot last week, so.
Yeah.
In the 2021 season, including Seager and Trey Turner, 10 Dodgers have had at least one multi-home run game. Can Eric name the other eight in 10 guesses? You've got 10 guesses. We'll see how many you get right.
Okay, so Muncy.
Yep, he has three.
Mookie Betts.
He has one.
I mean, it's really just going to be like naming the starters, but let's see. Justin Turner.
Yeah, we'll see.
I'm just methodically doing this so I'm not forgetting someone.
Yep.
Okay, and then... AJ Pollock.
Yep. Keeping track of this for me is going to be tough. You have four so far.
So.
Well, keep track of your misses. You've done four guesses and you haven't missed.
Yeah. I guess. Chris Taylor?
Yep, he has two.
He does have two. Okay. Will Smith.
Does not.
He doesn't. Okay. Wow. I have three more I have to get. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. Did Let's go Gavin Lux.
He's one of them.
And then we're going to go over to... oh, dang it. I don't remember him hitting two, but I'll just say Cody Bellinger.
He does.
Okay, and then, so the last one is where I'm going to get tripped up here, I think. I don't remember a certain person having it. So let's just say Matt Beatty.
Albert Pujols.
It was Pujols. Now, I don't remember him having two home runs, and now that's bothering me.
Was it the blowout against the Angels, I think?
Oh, you know what it was? I think it was that 22-run Diamondbacks game, possibly. Oh,
yeah, one of those blowout games against a team on the West.
Yeah.
That's clearly what I was thinking.
That starts with A in one of the names.
both names, Anaheim. According to Stathead, there have been 16 LA Dodger catchers with at least one multi-homer game. 8 catchers did it once. I'm going to give Eric one of those catchers. That's not very nice. Bill Sudeikis, who hit 2 home runs in a 1971 game against the Padres. You would have gotten that. Can Eric name the other 7?
God, okay, wait.
So with more than one. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I misread the question. I got it. I'm caught up.
Okay, so...
what a mean question. I thought clearly he's going to get
Because Will Smith didn't do it this year, I'm going to say Will Smith as one.
Correct.
Wow. right? Austin Barnes.
Austin Barnes has one.
Yeah, that was like a 7 RBI game, I think, against the Padres. Okay.
Actually, all of these games are against the Padres. It's really strange.
That's funny. It was. Pujols was that Arizona game, 22-1. He did start. I was going to say it would have been hilarious if he didn't start that game.
What's funny is I ruled out the blowout against the Cardinals because I'm like, oh, there would have been more storylines that was against his old team. And that theory didn't enter my mind when I guessed the Angels. Anyways. You've been gifted Sudeikis. You said Will Smith.
And Barnes.
And on Barnes.
Okay. only one multi-homer game. This is... let's just run through some backups. Rick Dempsey.
Yep, he has one. I like your theory.
Carlos Hernandez.
0.
Alex Trevino.
0.
He hit 25 in 1 year. I'm going to say it anyway. Paul LaDuca.
Paul LaDuca had 2.
Damn it. Okay. Mike Lieberthal.
Nope. I'm going to give you 2 more guesses.
Okay. Let's go... Todd Hundley was really good. What if he only had one? Let's just go Todd Hundley.
Todd Hundley had 4.
Okay, let's... Deonor Navarro.
Nope. So you missed...
All right.
Norm Sherry.
Of course.
David Ross. Mm-hmm. Dodgers legend. Russell Martin.
Ooh, damn it.
How did he only have one, huh? You said Dempsey and then Rod Barajas.
Damn it. All right.
Dodger Stadium was not always known as a friendly home run park, though that has changed in recent years. How many of the LA Dodgers who have had 7 or more multi-home run games at Dodger Stadium can Eric name?
Okay. Oh, seven or more. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is, don't have to name this, the scrubs of this one.
We'll go back to last week's rules. You got three strikes.
Okay. So Mike Piazza.
No, only five. Look at that.
But it's all at home. Yeah. So now trying to remember the, the order before, so but he was number one overall, so like he had a mm-hmm. bunch on the road, so
mm-hmm.
So because Ron Say was a jerk and wasn't on the other one, I'm not going to say him, but I will say Eric Karros.
He has seven, tied with a bunch of other players. Yeah. There are two players with more than seven.
Mm-hmm. And because that happened 5 minutes ago, I already forgot a lot of the answers in that in the total one. So, but I will say Sean Green.
One of the two. He has nine.
Gary Sheffield.
Gary Sheffield, strike two.
Mm-hmm.
He only had five.
And then, so I wonder how many. Even though he wasn't on the other list, I'm going to say Matt Kemp.
Also with five. So you missed number one, Andre Ethier.
Oh, wow. Captain Comeback.
Right. 11 such games. 11? And then wow. In the pile of people with seven, you have Justin Turner, Corey Seager, Jock Peterson, you said Karros, Yasmani Grandal, Steve Garvey, Joe Ferguson, and Cody Ballinger.
Yep.
There you go. You passed. How about that?
Yay!
Well, it does seem that Shohei Ohtani will be the American League MVP. I'm not sure there is a clear-cut favorite in the National League, especially because neither the Dodgers, Giants, or Brewers really have a definitive candidate. Juan Soto is having a great year and is the best position player in the National League this season. However, a quick check would seem to show that there has never been a season where both the American and National League MVPs were under 500 teams. My question is, should that matter? And second, who are your choices for each league's MVPs this season? I hate this debate.
Yeah, I mean, right.
Like, I don't have an answer, but I still hate the debate.
It matters to a point, like to where it can, if the players are like close enough, like it could be like a tiebreaker or like a, you know, it could be a separator maybe. But like it seems like Ohtani is like so very clearly the American League MVP. Like even if Vlad Guerrero Jr. wins the Triple Crown, and that's easy. National League is harder. Like everyone's bunched together. But Juan Soto has been like so good. He's like kind of distancing himself. I think the only other person with a shot is Bryce Harper. I think Phillies are like sort of in contention. They're in a worse spot than the Dodgers, like in terms of the division, because they don't have a fallback, but they're 2.5 back with six to play on the Braves. They're also technically still alive in the wild card race. Wait, unless they lost. Oh, I don't think they played yesterday. So yeah, like I would probably say Soto in the National League and Ohtani in the American League, but I don't really have a good read on what the National League is going to do, but I think that's probably going to be what it ends up being.
That's what I was going to say as well. And should it matter? I don't know. I guess a little bit, but it feels a little weird because what I'd say, like, let me put it this way. It's probably going to be Soto unless the Braves collapse and the Phillies, you know, win a bunch. And then does that really mean Bryce Harper? Like, is that like, it's the whole RBI pitcher wins thing where they're worth tracking. Doesn't matter. I don't know. Give it to Soto. How about that?
Sure.
Rolling Stone recently updated their top 500 greatest songs list that first came out in 2004, and over half, 254 songs were replaced. My question to both of you, do you think if you had, you created a playlist in the early 2000s and then updated it today, how much, if at all, Have your musical tastes changed or evolved since then? Also for Eric, Bob Dylan's Like a Rolling Stone is still a top 10 song. Do you think in 20 years, Dylan will still be an artist on these type of lists?
I mean, he's still going to be like around. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be, he's going to still be like top 10 for that. That always seems to be the one that gets ranked up there. For him, my musical taste, I don't think has evolved since like 1998. So it's like a perfect timing for this question. That said, I've tried to listen to more new music lately. Listened to a good amount of Phoebe Bridgers earlier in the year, and I think I've played the Olivia Rodrigo album like 40 times, like, or listening to it like on Spotify. And it's like, it's just like really good background music for me, and I like it. So maybe I need to listen to more new music. But for the most part, I just listen to like the same stuff I've always listened to. So yeah, I'm probably not the best person to like judge this type of stuff. But yeah, I'm honestly shocked that many songs were replaced. But I mean, it kind of makes sense, I guess. But that does seem like a lot of turnover.
So I alluded to this. I still think it's bad UI. So at the very top where you think the site URL is, there actually is a pagination, but to me it wasn't obvious that I can click. I was trying to get to the top 50. So if our listeners are interested in going to this, look at the top. There's a way to do that. I didn't see that. So I was just clicking the load more button at the bottom that was only giving me 50 at a time, and it was really aggravating. Looking at the list, do you know what's number one? Because it was, I thought, like a Rolling Stone when they first came out, or maybe the 2004 list.
I don't. Is it like Satisfaction or something like that? Or
it is Respect by Aretha Franklin.
Okay. And this is brought to you by the new movie Respect, starring Jennifer Hudson.
Fight the Power, number two.
Public Enemy. Nice.
There's some good. Strawberry Fields Forever is the best Beatles song.
What? No.
What?
Yeah.
That seems weird.
That's wrong.
It's a good song, but.
Yeah,
Dreams is the best song on Rumors. I think that's maybe fair. I think it may be the
Wait,
chain.
Is that the song the dude sang with the ocean spray on the back of the truck?
What?
the TikTok guy who was like,
I thought you were singing. You're supposed to be like the old unhip one on this. Right. I have no idea what you're talking about.
The guy, he made it like Ocean Spray, like bought him a truck and like paid him money. Like he was on TikTok.
I literally have never heard of this, and this is blowing
he's,
my
he's
mind.
He's on a skate. I forgot his name. He was on a skateboard, and like just like joyriding, like holding the back of a truck with one hand, and then drinking Ocean Spray with his other hand. While lip syncing to a Fleetwood Mac song from Rumors, and I forgot what the song was. I will look it up as you keep talking.
In terms of my music taste, I'm like, it's interesting. Over the last 20 years have been, you said you were at the perfect time to ask this. I'm in the, it's been more like the last 10 or 15. I still listen to a lot of music, but a lot of like music has become more utilitarian. Like I am collecting music that I can listen to while I work or listen to while I work out, and less sort of art appreciation that I used to do, you know, 10-15 years ago. I think a lot of my absolute favorite songs would be the same, but so maybe it's more like 25% turnover. But there would be turnover for sure. New songs you gotta cram in there. Certain styles that just don't quite fit where you are in your life anymore. I do try to keep update to a playlist where I try to only add songs to it that I think I will never get sick of. And I've had that list now for it's probably close to a decade, maybe a little bit less. And I'm happy to report I've removed very few songs from that, but I'm also very picky on what I add.
I have important news. The gentleman's name was Nathan Apodaca. He went on TikTok by the name 420 Dogface 208, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. I just sent you a thing, and it was to the song Dreams.
There you go.
So I did retain that knowledge somehow. But like, oh, they made a commercial out of it. Like, it was like kind of insane. Like, it was.
You have to appreciate from where I am on the spectrum of what you say. Ocean right, spray, exactly. Minor truck is great.
Right, exactly. Like, it's the most random collection of words I possibly could have said. So I understand.
Oh, like, while we're updating news, the Dodgers did win the Pythagorean title, NL West title from the Giants. 80 runs scored, 78 runs allowed.
It's a ball game.
Not sure if Eric can believe that the Raiders are 3-0. It is their first time since 2002 starting their season with three straight wins. And while I know Jacob does not follow the NFL like he once did, he lives in a community that probably loves their team as much as any metropolitan area in the country. My question is first for me, how much, if at all, does he get caught up in the Chiefs hoopla, perhaps due to his wife's random fandom? Rice family fandom, I should say. And for Eric, how cautiously optimistic is he about the Raiders? Yeah, Melissa does not follow football, but her her grandmother for sure does. We have to schedule things around Chief games. So Patrick Mahomes is a really easy player to like and root for, and he's really rooted in the community that I've rooted myself in, so lot of respect there, and the team is good enough that, like, whenever, like, say I'm at a family gathering out here on Melissa's side, or at a sports bar, not that I'm doing much of that anymore, say I'm in a circumstance where the Chiefs game is on, I'm more prone to kind of get into it, but I'm not going to go out of my way to watch it, really. And when I do end up watching it, there'll be like the stretch where I'm like, oh, what? I remember really liking football. And then there's like 18 penalties in a row. And then I'm kind of reminded on why I eventually just, you know, there's a lot of other sports for me to watch. And I'll just do that instead. What about you? What about them Raiders, as they say?
It's them Bears. So I know, but during like baseball season, it's still like, I'll catch stuff in the background, both like USC and the Raiders, but like Raiders are always, they've been on the back burner for a while, just mostly because they've been really bad. Mm-hmm. But I did, I caught up with one of my friends on Sunday and went over to his house, and we did watch Raiders Dolphins, and that was a weird game, but like it was fun just hanging out and watching that. And they do look pretty good. Like, I'm still like a little skeptical, but they actually look like the defense is like good enough to like at least keep it up. Like, the Chiefs are pretty clearly the best team in the division. I know they're 1-2 at the moment, but that's like not a big deal, I don't think. So yeah, they're probably gonna like win the division, but like I think the Raiders are like good enough probably to make the playoffs, but you know, I don't know what to expect beyond that. Like, they're, yeah, that would be like a win, I think, for them, like given how they've been the last, you know, two decades almost. So yeah, like they're entertaining, and that's about all you can ask them. But like, yeah, once baseball season stops, I'll pay more attention to that. And but yeah, it's more like what I catch it when I can at this point.
Final question. I often ask sandwich-related questions, and we're so grateful that you do, because there are so many kinds of sandwiches, and we all enjoy most of them. Today's is about a certain type of sandwich, the fried cutlet sandwich. In LA, there has been a recent trend to make a chicken katsu sandwich on thick slices of white bread at local pop-up and a few storefront, and I know historically, particularly in the Midwest, the fried pork tenderloin sandwich is a classic. These are different than my fried chicken sandwiches you see at both fast food and chicken restaurants. My question is, does this type of sandwich interest you? And for Jacob, during your travels on the road, did you ever eat one of those pork tenderloin sandwiches? Have you had a pork tea sandwich?
No, I have never had one, but it sounds delicious.
It is. So it's definitely a Midwest thing. I think my birth state of Indiana is particularly proud of the, and I wanted to make sure that wasn't like a thing that every state in the Midwest claims, and I googled just what city state most known for pork tenderloin sandwich, and Indiana number one with a bullet. So yeah, especially when I go back home to Indiana, in Lafayette, definitely get a pork tea there. But my favorite diner here in Lawrence, Melissa actually ordered it last time we were there as a, my mother ordered it, as a delicious pork tenderloin sandwich. So
I was looking up, I don't know what made me think of this, cause I don't even remember if, like Zanku chicken, I don't think has chicken katsu, but for some reason that's what first thing that popped into my head. And then speaking of a weird pop culture thing, when I lived with my cousin, his wife like was just binge watching Charmed, old episodes of Charmed,
as you do,
and it was always on. And so I was home a lot working, and like so I watched a lot of those as well. And there was some point, one of the demons, I think, was named Zanku. And, of course, like, during a fight, one of the people fighting him goes, "What's the matter, Zanku? Chicken?" And, like, it was just one of the dumbest lines possible and, like, very, like, LA-centric. But, like, it made me laugh really hard. And so I always think of that when thinking about chicken. And, but, yeah, like, I've just never really had that kind of a sandwich, but it does sound like something I would absolutely try.
Yeah. Come on out. You got to go to Indiana proper. I should say that, but we'll hook you up here in Kansas.
Nice. No, that sounds good. And like, you know, Craig usually sends us off with like lunch pangs or whatever when we're done recording this. This is less so because it's not immediately available, but I appreciate the you know, the sort of laying the seeds for this. So one day we will have this, and we'll certainly talk about it on the podcast. But until then, next week we'll be talking about the playoffs in some form or another, and we will talk to you then. And enjoy the last week of the regular season, everybody. Thanks for listening.